Session number 106-99.
Brigadier Rymer Jones, Reel 4. You were talking about your time in the Loos Salient and about a shoot and a raid, two separate events. If you could sort of take us through these stories.
The shoot was merely demonstrating, for my own information, what we could do from the very poor emplacements we had then, just dug out of the support lines, where the range to the German front line was well within our scope. Now, my four mortars covering, let's say, 300 yards of trench. And it happened that my boss at division was coming up with some senior staff officers to... I'd told them that I was going to try and do a shoot by telephone and so on from the front line myself. And they said, oh, we're coming up to have a look, you see. Well, it so happened that I did what you do on Salisbury Plain or anything else. You see, I'd give them the orders, just like shoot with guns. And every 5 seconds they went off, and they all fell in the thing. It blew out. This is the thing that I've always been sorry about afterwards. Why, I don't know, because they didn't spare us. But there were bits of body and clothing and so on all shooting in the air. And I did one more lot when apparently the rescue people were coming in. And so they took it in the neck too. It was most effective because the thing that Germans had never done before, they were blowing hunting horns whenever they saw one of mine in the air, you see. Again, what a superiority complex, certainly. But the people who'd come up had been my major for my field battery was one of them. And he said, of course, I ought never to have let him go. But it had the result that they said, oh, this is fine. Squads of gunners, they said, well, they've got nothing to do. We're carrying these things up and dumping them. Engineers came and they dug me marvellous dugouts and so on, you see. And we're expecting that we were going to push off a couple of hundred a day. Well, it didn't work like that at all, because I knew what happened was that our poor infantry were going to have retaliation. It all meant nothing, really. You weren't making any ground, you weren't doing any good.
And you were very much aware of that, because I've heard infantrymen talk about trench mortars and say how much they disliked having trench mortar batteries.
They hated them in some, they loved us, because I wouldn't do these silly things that got retaliation unless there was something definitely on, like a raid.
And that was your general policy. So when they tried to encourage you to fire more, you didn't respond. You just carried on firing only when necessary.
Yes, occasionally. Because this was all before the Somme.
What was the rate of fire you could achieve with these things?
Oh, that didn't matter. I suppose I could have... you had to sponge out a lot, you see, because there were a lot of accidents in trench mortars through the thing just flopping out and going off in your own emplacement. If it was all damp or wet. You see, this is the sort of drill that you had to do. You asked me what you did at the trench mortar school and so on. Otherwise, you were for heaven or the other place. Well, it's not a question of raid in this case. It's a question of raids. The powers that be said you must go on raiding, or you must find some way of letting us know what German troops are up to you. Now, in my particular bit, there's very often a battalion in there. I think they were the Sherwood Foresters. And they had a wonderful, courageous young fellow. I've been out in no man's land with him at night, but I haven't done with him what he did so frequently, either himself or with a sergeant, two men. He'd cut through the German wire, which was enormous red stacks of it, and either bring out some German sentry across, or kill him, or... So we were able to say, look, we've got this, now we won't do the raid. And when I say a raid, I mean a big show with the company of the battalion or so on, you see.
So he was achieving with one or two men?
All by himself, yes. Wonderful chap.
He was getting what division or want or higher up wanted to know.
Absolutely, yes. And in the end, of course, they worked him literally to death because he was killed. I was very angry about it because they said, all right, you will do this area. This was where I'd blown all the wire away and blown some of the Germans too. And the Germans hadn't replaced their wire. They'd been very cunning. They'd put white tapes the whole distance. They say, well, the British are always foolish. They'll come and attack here, you see. And so we said, you can't possibly do that. We persuaded them that we wouldn't. So in the end, they said, all right, you will do the triangle. The double crest here of slag from the mine, which was just across in the German lines. The double crest here had running from it a triangle, we called it the triangle, super wired. And the 1st Division, before they left, had attacked that, and they'd had a shocking defeat, so to speak. They lost a devil of a lot of men, they did no good at all, and they made the place open to snipers. When we went in, we had 14 killed by snipers the first 3 days. So they said, you'll do the triangle again. It was murder. Absolute murder. Or would have been. I was with the CO of the battalion in his dugout to see what was going. And the plan was that there'd be a small barrage fired by the gunners, which they didn't have any good effect, so they called it off. Well, then it was all muddle and disaster. The chaps were sent out, were lying out in the rain, preparatory to going in, and our people put a Bangalore torpedo through the wire. I don't know if you know what that is. A great long thing which explodes, and that was to blow all the wire away. But the Germans pulled it in the other side, you see. And they cancelled this, and they cancelled this. And the guns went off when they weren't supposed to. And they give the troops lying out another tot of rum, which was very stupid. Because when the thing was finally cancelled, some of these boys were running in and drunk. They were very young, most of them. And it was a scandalous show. Fortunately, all I could do was I got onto my nearest gun to it. Said, shove over 5 rounds. I hope it hits something. It possibly did, because they were probably going back. But it only showed what a lot of cows they were down at divisional headquarters, which was 7 miles away in Nerlemeen. Now, what'll interest you was in that same place, the Battle of Loos, which was, after all, we were, so to speak, our children taking over in Loos there. in the actual battle itself, when the first success came, and they got onto these limits of the salient, the Scottish troops were lying out there waiting for the people behind to send more people in, if they were ever going to do any good, you see. They hadn't got any troops except cavalry, as usual. Except two battalions just came out. And at the critical period of this battle, these fellows who'd already marched mostly from base walked 7 miles up the line, the first time they'd ever seen a shot fired in the war. It was an absolute scandal. Of course, it was a great failure. So that I was perfectly happy with this very exciting and at times amusing, and these lovely people in the front trenches. You know.
Just a couple of aspects of trench mortar work. Were you ever used, you said sniping was a problem, were your mortars ever used to try and catch a sniper if there was a suspected...
Well, you couldn't possibly do that.
You wouldn't plaster a suspected area where a sniper might be hiding then?
No, because we weren't firing, you see, the guns, I mean, your trench mortar's no good for that. You can't, a thing that's fixed in the ground like that, you can't suddenly switch it round here or do this. At any rate, you wouldn't know where they were, otherwise there wouldn't be a good sniper. To show that off, here's the double crash here. The Germans occupied this part, down to there. And we had most of the other, or we had most of this part, right. So they were sniping, and it was a great success at us. So we had a fellow up here. I always remember, because I went up to have a chat to him one day up in his sniper's post. He had what he called an elephant rifle. And actually, when you got there, undercover, you were looking down the German front line trench. And so this fellow, he was very naughty, really, because he was picking off the people in the German front line. And then when the stretcher bearers and the first aid people were coming up, he was shooting them off too. Well, you say that's fair, they were doing the same to us, I suppose. But I didn't like it. It was...
You could actually see. You looked through into the German front.
Oh, yes. Straight down the German trench. And those are the people who later on, after my successful shoot, were blowing hunting horns every time they saw one in the air. But it was a... You say, what did you do here? What did you do there? It wasn't organized. You made your own organization in this trench warfare. You see what I mean? Unless... We were going to have an offensive. Well, then, of course, all the things came in, you must do this and you must do that, the Battle of the Somme, and they tell you you've got to do things which makes it certain that nearly the youth of England are going to be wiped out.
What about, I believe once you had to deal with an observation post, or a suspected observation post, a tower?
Oh, that was during that period before we went down to the Somme, where we were that's right, I was in there, and I always remember because we had some of the Bantam division, the Scottish, the HLI, and the little men were as wide as they were tall. They were great chaps. And I was up there talking to the infantry, and the CO said to me, look, there's this tower that goes up. And I don't think it was there, but we always suspected, because there were iron protection round the top of the tower. We said, there's a sniper in there. I used to spend some quiet afternoons in broken down miners' cottages there, sniping at it myself and wanging against the thing, you see. I got a bit of a kick out of it. It was on this occasion, the CO saying, I know they've got somebody there, and can't you do something about it? Well, I said, no. My extreme range is 400 yards, and that is near a five. However, we'll have a go. So we shoved an extra charge in. Very naughty, because it might have blown up, done anything. And to my amazement, I saw this sailing over. And then I saw the tower leaning towards me like this, falling. Of course, it was miles away, but it seemed as if it was going to hit me. And the troops were delighted, of course, dancing up and down on the firing places. Delightful. And my enemy, the VC's CRA, Commanding Royal Artillery of the Division, Paddy Reid, BC, he did on that occasion send up a thing. It was a picture of the Cuffley Zeppelin being brought down, you know, fire and so on. He'd written underneath, Y-40 bringing down my entire, I've a P-16 miss. But it was a fairy story to me, this show. It was marvellous. I think I put in my memoirs that when we were in the Hulluck and there were all these trenches going back, you could get out of the back ones at night. And there was a sapper officer. He had a Labrador dog with him. And so we, you know, this awful plague of rats, like cats. And we used to get out behind the trenches at night and get the dog to drive these rats out. And we were running over the plain, shooting at them with pistols. All quite stupid and so on.
Well, I was going to ask you generally about life. What were the rats a real problem in the front line?
Oh, awful. To the army as a whole. They were appalling. You see, there was this, what they call trench fever, the men got. It was a shocking thing. And trench fever was actually from the rats. At least I know it was, although they perhaps haven't got it there. And they called it something A in hospital. But it was awful thing, because they were filthy, you know. They were full of disease. They were terrible. It's bad enough, the lice.
Well, lice is another thing. Did the men in your unit, or did you have any trouble with lice?
Oh, everybody did. When they went down after the 3 days, their clothing, their shirts and so on, were all put in divisional baths they had down at Leberry. Wonderful place. I used to have myself. I didn't have any lice because I got a thing from Harrods called Anti-Vermin Body Belt. It was just a light sort of cotton thing that was around here with this impregnated stuff in. I never had lice in my life. But the men did. The men did. It was all these things came from trench stuff. I don't think there was any trouble at all in the open fighting for the latter part of the war, certainly not with us. Not at all.
How did you get on with the men in the line? I mean, you had the men of your little unit, Y-40.
My men were marvellous. I told you the story in the things, how one day one of my mortars had one man and one, I don't know whether he was a corporal, because they called them corporal 1 minute and a bombardier the next, you see. But this fellow, Taylor was his name, was with me in the front line. And there, I've explained how the front, or the eastern front line ran with these bays and the firing step here. And then, of course, the rest of it was just a narrow trench running along, you see. Well, I took Taylor down the front line in order to shoot my mortars, you see, with the thing over the top. And he was in the next bay. And presently, I think it was a 4-2 or 5-9 shell came over and landed just over the Peridot, that's the back of the trench, just over there, scattering miles of earth again on top of us. But we were perfectly all right. And I called out to him, "You all right, Taylor?" He said, "Yes, sir, I'm all right. Are you?" I said, "Yes, I saw the bugger coming." Which you could, you know. If it was a howitzer shell, you particularly, if you were in the line, you could see it coming down. But afterwards, he became one of the top people in a big betting shop in... But he wrote to me when there was a thing in the evening news about me. Picture of me tending my roses. And he said, "Was that Mr. Ivor Jones who did this?" So I wrote off to him and got him up to Blackheath. But we would like that, you see. There was no... This is why... We're so happy in the Palestine Police Old Comrades. The chap who's my greatest friend, who ran me around everywhere and so on, and still does, he was a sergeant, he was a mounted sergeant. But I'm afraid that people can't do that, even in villages. You get an appalling amount, to me, of snobbery in England. You know? It's so unhealthy, too. That isn't to say that you've got to always bring yourself down on the level, and you know what I mean? But you don't lose anything, because my people all give me the greatest respect, although there's no reason why they should.
You knew each of your men by name, you knew all their names and
backgrounds. Oh, lawyers.
Of your trench mortar team?
I can remember going... coming around the corner of the trench to where one of my emplacements was. And the chaps were outside. It was a hot, sunny day and so on. And there was a little fellow there. And he was busy telling us how he'd been a Carter Patterson's boy, the boy who goes and delivers stuff. And then... while the thing is moving, he comes back, the rope behind, swings himself in, you see. And he was telling these other two chaps how he'd, on this occasion, had a fat tart, as he called it, on his knee and so on. And they were all laughing, you see. And I appeared there, you see. He was very flustered. But we had a damn good laugh. There was nothing strange about it. But when I'd been walking down there, front line every day, and say in the early morning, just as when the sun's coming up, and you might get the stand down with the fella coming off the fire step, because you could see things, and there'd be a fella there with a Tommy cooker. Or even a Dixie in the front line trench, making tea. And they'd say to me, "You have a cup of tea, Governor?" I'd say, "Yes, please." I mean, you were all matey then. These were just ordinary private soldiers.
They wouldn't actually say Governor, would they? They'd say Sir, wouldn't they? Or would they? Would they always address you as Sir?
Yes. Yes, they would, definitely.
Would you call them by their first names or by their surnames? How would you address them, or would you just call them Bombardier.
Or by their surnames. By their surnames. And they were very rigid themselves about these things. When I was in the Guards Brigade, we had a wonderful Sergeant Major in my battery who went on to become Regimental Sergeant Major. He was an old regular, and he used to... They had Batman. I don't know what they did for them normally, but he used to, when he was down at the wagon line, he used to get one of the vehicles and have tarpaulins over, and his Batman would come and bring him his food and so on. They were very important about that. And when I was instructor at the shop, Mr. Ridger, the regimental sergeant major, he was most particular about these things.
How many men did you have in Y-40?
Well, I had 10 and the other fellow had 10 too. But it was a command. It was my first command.
So how many were there to each gun? Three?
Here we have four guns. Three or two. You see, I generally took 10 men into the land with me.
You have an NCO. That would be the corporal, would it?
Yes. That would be the highest there. The sergeants would be down normally. Or sergeant major. No, I might be a sergeant.
How did you get on with the local infantry officers and the local infantry regiments?
Very well indeed. Very well indeed. Well, they varied tremendously. I remember when I was... You see, I'm partly Welsh, Jones. But I was very matey with everybody in the line. And so a Welsh battalion commander and his number two said to me, "Won't you come along and have food with us?" They had a little dugout, kind of, it wasn't even a dugout properly. However, I went along and it was the most miserable evening I had. They both came from the Carnarvon area where they're terribly close, the Welsh. And they talked about all local politics and all this. I don't think I said a word.
Would you normally mess with local infantry officers? Because you'd be the only officer of your unit there, wouldn't you? In the front line, what arrangements did you normally make for yourself? Would you?
Oh, you had no. You just made your own arrangements with Parmenter. Used to cook me up all sorts of things, you see. I used to take eggs and so on that I bought at the village up with me.
So you messed on your own normally? You didn't normally go...
Oh, there was no chance of doing it in the trenches. No. No, troops were feeding in the front line even.